I love success stories, and I bet you do too. I love the stories about people that have overcome tremendous odds, adversity, such as depression, isolation, addiction, you name it, and they overcame it. It might have taken some time, but they did it. And now they are living their best life. You are going to love my next guest. His name is John Simpson. Now, John spent many years as a correctional officer, and I don't have to tell you, the listener, that correctional officers face mental and physical assaults on a daily basis, a very difficult job. John eventually stepped away from his career because he started to sink, like so many of us, started to sink. The job was getting to him. John ended up doing what is hard for many of us in the first responder field. He reached out for help, and he landed at Shatterproof down in Florida, the same program I was in, and it saved his life. It saved my life. John came through that program bigger and better, ready to take on the world. He is an amazing individual. He's an author of Elephantinity, The Saving of a Hero. You got to check it out. It's going to be in the show notes. This is a great show, folks. If you are on the edge, if you need help, if you need that push forward, take some notes. John Simpson, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the show. Patrick here. Welcome back to the CJ Evolution Podcast, a top-ranked show, top-ranked because of you, listener and supporter. Thank you so much for the continuing support. Big shout-out to you, the criminal justice professional. Whatever you were doing within the field, wherever you are at, know this, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Please take care of yourself. Take care of your families, your friends, watch each other's back, and come home safe. You know, as you're listening to this episode, I want you to think about what you are going through right now. If you're going through challenges, if you're overwhelmed and you need that next level of care, there is no shame in coming forward and asking for help. If people are going to give you a hard time and judge you and call you weak for seeking that next level of care, you do not need them in your life. You do not need them in your life. The people who truly care about you, truly love you, will support you. Please remember that, and please take that step forward. The Shatterproof program in Florida is an amazing program for first responders, fire, EMS, paramedics, dispatchers. It's for everybody, and it is a first responder community. Again, I went through the program. It is an amazing program, and it had saved my life. Please, if you're suffering, take that step forward. You can reach out to me. Everything you need is in the show notes. So please, step forward. You know, I want to talk to you about some amazing technology that is a game changer for your organization. Detectachem is an amazing company. Innovative, on the cutting edge, they have mobile threat technology that fits in the palm of your hands now, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This application technology is a must-have for your organization. Check out their link, Detectachem, at cjevolution.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is John Simpson. He's a former corrections officer, and he's also an author. And last but not least, he was a former patient at Shatterproof, the same program I went through. John, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, Patrick?
Oh, man. Thanks for coming on, brother. I know we connected recently and we both share a common bond. Not only were we in the criminal justice system, but we were also patients of FHE, the First Responder Shatterproof Program. And I want to talk about that. But first of all, brother, who is John Simpson? You got an amazing background. But, yeah. But who is John Simpson? I know I mentioned corrections officer for a while. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Union, New Jersey, and my dad is
Jersey.
Yeah. Oh yeah, buddy. Oh yeah. So my dad just retired. He put about 30 years in the corrections up in Jersey. And
wow.
My mom was a 911 operator, and she just retired 30 yeah. years.
Well, congratulations to your parents, brother. Now, how yeah. did you just wanted to follow in the parents' footsteps with criminal justice or what?
Well, that's the funny part is, so when I was in high school, you know, I got real bad grades. And so what are you going to do? My dad said, take the civil service test. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I followed that, you know, I got hired when I think I just turned 19. I just turned 19, and I got called, and I went to the State Police Academy in Seagirt,
yeah,
New Jersey. Yeah. But, and now, I was only on the job for about 6.5 years. I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's enough time to get a lot of experience. 6.5 years, dude.
I mean,
that's still a lot of experience.
Yeah. Well, the turnover rate where I was, you know, I was like number two in seniority on my shift when I left.
Wow.
So I hung in there that, you know.
Well, I always admire people. I think I told you this before, John, before, you know, a couple of days ago or last week when we spoke. I admire the heck out of correctional people, you know, past and present, because that's a difficult environment to be in. And you really have to use good communication skills to survive, right?
Yeah, you definitely. Now, I wrestled when I was growing up.
And yeah.
So I was a pretty tough kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I first started, I was like 135 pounds.
Yeah.
I couldn't grow hair on my face. And these guys, they were, you know, so tough and, you know, scary looking. And
yeah,
I couldn't show them, you know. So, but I also knew I couldn't. My dad taught me enough, you know, you can't be a tough guy, you know, mm-hmm. but you can't be a punk either. So, it was definitely, I had to grow up real fast.
Yeah.
Real fast.
Yeah. And I appreciate, brother, your service in the correctional system. I think sometimes corrections gets overlooked, to be quite honest, with, you know, the criminal justice system and the first responder community. But you guys do, and women do, a tremendous job. It's a very difficult environment. I know when I was a cop, man, I just wanted, if I made an arrest, I would just want to get to the jail and get the hell out of there as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, everything from the smells to, you know, the way, you know, there's like blood on the walls in the cells and, you know, it's just, it's a horrible place. It's, you know, the lighting sucks. Like every little thing you could think of is terrible. You know, it's like hell on earth. And so,
go ahead, sir.
No, I was just gonna say, like, you hit the nail on the head. I only hung on there for about six and a half years, and I give it up to the people that are doing 25, 30 years in there, and the people that, you know, did the time I did, you know.
It wasn't
easy.
No, it wasn't. And so you got out, you did some time in corrections. Again, thank you. And what happened after you left the correctional field?
So after I left, I remember I was on light duty. I had gotten hurt at work, and I was sitting in the control center with my buddy, and like, I think my arm was in a sling, and I'm reading this, my buddy's reading this book, and he tosses it over to me. He's like, wow, man, that was a good book. And it was a short little book and big print. I'm like, yeah, I can read this. So I spent the rest of that shift reading this book. It was called Who Moved My Cheese?
Right? I know that book. That's a good book.
Oh my gosh, man. So I read it, and there's a part in there where the guy kind of says, like, look around and smell your cheese, see if it's gone bad. It's time to change, you know? Yeah. So I read that book, and I'm like, damn, I'm quitting my job tomorrow. I swear, man. So I'm like, but what am I gonna do? You know, I make a lot of money doing this. Where else am I gonna, you know? So I called my buddy who had recently left, and he was like, I want to get into the, you know, surgical field. I was like, surgery, like, on people. And he was like, I'm going to go to surgical technology school. I was like, that's cool, man. When is that start? And he's like, tomorrow. I was like, you're not kidding. I was like, so what do you do? Like, and he's like, you know, you set up the sterile field and you pass instruments to doctors and you got to know every step to every procedure. I was like, that sounds cool, man. And, you know, so I was like, all right, sign me up, man. He's like, what? I was like, yeah. I'm typing up this letter.
Your resignation letter.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give it to the chief in the morning. And he's like, you're kidding. No, I'm not. And then I called up my other buddy. He got me a part-time job cutting grass at Liberty Hall Museum, Kane University, right? So I had it all set up. I walked in with that letter of resignation, handed it to the chief. He's like, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I just today I'm enrolling in surgical tech school, and then I'm going to, and I got a job already. It's like, all right, well, I'm happy for you. I'm going to miss you, you know. So
jealous.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Like, for as miserable as I was in there, because I worked in, you know, I don't want to talk too bad about it, but, you know, I worked in a pretty violent and overran place. And, you know, we had the feds and, you know, the juveniles and the federal contract we picked up after I had already been working there for like 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And they picked up this Fed contract. We're getting all the cartel members and the Serranos, Norteños. Like, I had a real bad incident with a guy who was actually from Arizona, your neck of the woods. Well, not from there. He was, I guess, you know, Mexican. And so they were all like the ICE detainees that were being sent back. You know, the goal was to send them back after they did some time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had enough. It was incident after incident. I was always getting hurt. I was always getting drunk after, you know, I was a mess. I was always on the phone. Like, I'd be on my break and knowing that I'm about to fight. Like, when I get back in there, because I worked 3 to 11s. So I knew that this dude wasn't locking down and this guy, he's got something for me. You know, so I'd be on the phone with my dad, like shaking and like, you know, hey dad, what do I do here? And he'd be like, you know, just keep your cool, all that stuff. He was great to have on the phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, having to walk back in there, you know, knowing that you could get hurt. Like, it is a good possibility.
Oh, seriously hurt. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I remember like the inmates actually got a hold of our, like our contact information too, like our addresses and our phone numbers and our first names. They approached me in this one unit and they said, hey, John. I said, whoa, what? And they say, yeah, you live at blah, 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 Townley in Union, New Jersey. And I said, whoa, how do you know? Yeah, we got people waiting outside your house. They're going to kill your mother.
Jeez.
And I had to call my mom, tell her, call, you know, she worked for the police department. So she had to get on the phone and, you know, call the guys to sit on the house, you know, because of that crap, you know, I guess somebody was irresponsible with a piece of paper they left in the unit.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. So crap like that, you know, and then, you know, the fights and all that. It was just too mentally draining.
So you mentioned that you were drinking, right?
Oh my God, were we? You know, we worked 3 to 11s, and you know, you don't have to be up for work until what, like 2 p.m. So we were going out every single night, you know, we'd get out, you know, we'd meet at the bar at, you know, 11:30, 12. We'd drink till 3 a.m. and then go back to my house or somebody else's house and drink, you know. And, you know, when we had a bad day, we were drinking, you know. Yeah. And then you know, get to bed at like 4 a.m, 5 a.m, and then you wake up at like 2 p.m. and you're ready to do it all over again. Yeah. It was just how we dealt with it, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't know how else to deal with what was happening, you know, because we were all stressed.
Yeah. And that's as you know, I mean, I know that too. I mean, alcohol is a you know, a coping mechanism, you know. I mean,
yeah,
to numb the pain and, you know, to get you to the next day. And I was on that cycle too, for a while. And, you know, that's what, you know, that was the, you know, the catalyst for me was, and I think we talked about this where, you know, I started having, you know, dark thoughts. And, that's when I reached out for help. And I don't know if you want to get into a little bit about what landed you in treatment. I don't know if you want to go down that route, but.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
it's not something that I'm ashamed of. I'm proud of the man I've become so far. Yeah. And my goal is to help as many people as I can.
Yeah.
But I would say that, you know, I was drinking a lot and, but I remember just getting these nightmares and I couldn't get them to stop. And I was always scared, like you know, wherever I was, I was jumpy. Like this one time my mom put her hand on my shoulder and I almost had a stroke, you know, and she remembers that because I was out in like, we were out in nature, like, and she came up behind me and just put her hand on my shoulder and I, you know, it was like getting electrocuted.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I was feeling like that, but I've been a shatterproof 3 times.
Yeah.
You know, and the first time was about 4 years ago or 3 years ago, maybe. And, you know, I don't know, like that something didn't take. I don't know. I don't think I was ready to get better.
Yeah.
And then this last time I went in and it was more of my anxiety. Like I was getting these panic attacks and I was suicidal. I didn't want to live anymore. And I was desperate. I fell to my knees and I was like crying in a ball. And I was, you know, I said to myself, it's either time to check out or it's time to, you know, go over there and check in.
Yeah.
And I went in there and now this last time I went in there so desperate. I was crying. I could barely talk. I don't think I really talked, you know, for a couple of weeks. I mean, I was making conversation, but I was so out of it. I was shaken up. And I remember I was in the group room with Ray, and Ray's known me for a while now. And he's like the guy kind of introduced Ray. He was kind of one of the founders of Shatterproof and this program. So it took me a while, but man, that program saved my life. I went in there basically in the fetal position and came out and I haven't looked back. Like I'm feeling so good. Like they taught me so many different things from how to breathe, I went in and I did that bio bed.
Oh yeah, right? With Sue.
Oh yeah, yeah, with Sue. Philly Sue.
Gotta love Sue,
girl. You gotta love Sue. Anyway, so I remember I went in there with her and my heart rate was like 150 and I could barely sit still on this vibrating bed, right? But anyway, I gave it a shot. I put the you know, noise canceling headphones on. I put on the blackout sunglasses and I laid back and I listened to the sounds of like the ocean and yeah. the bed vibrates with the way the waves are going. I'm like, oh yeah. Right. So, but she has you breathe anyway. So I went in there and it measures your heart rate. Yeah. My heart rate when I went in, it was like $150, $160. I don't know. It was high. And then yeah. when I left, it was down to like 87. And yeah. that was in a period of 15 minutes. And I felt so much better. And I was like, wow, that's within me, you know?
Yeah. yeah. I mean, it's
I've been trying to take these Xanax pills and, you know, anything to feel better, like drinking. I mean, and then they taught me how to like live again without having to be dependent on anything other than what's, you know,
yeah,
what's around you.
And yeah, I mean, it's interesting you said that, John. I was in the almost the same position. I mean, you know, I was suicidal ideation. I was drinking. I was scared to death, you know, when I got there. I had the same kind of awakening, for lack of a better word, where I started, you know, I was quiet for a while and then I started getting involved and I said, yeah, I'm going to go all in. And then you mentioned BioBed, did that, the neurostimulation, which is amazing.
Fantastic.
Cutting edge technology, state-of-the-art fantastic. Stuff that they're using. But one yeah. of the things that really struck out too is, you know, you were there a couple times. And the one thing that amazes me with a program like Shatterproof is there's no judgment. You know, there was no judgment when I was there because men and women, they say, well, I've been here before. And nobody, at least in my group, was saying, oh man, what's wrong with you? I mean, it was like, okay, I'm glad you're back. You know,
yeah,
there was
yeah,
no, I mean, no judgment, you know, which was amazing.
They
to
don't
me.
Give
know,
up on you.
Yeah. I know for the listener, they might think, well, you know, well, but it's as simplistic as it might sound. I mean, that says a lot where people aren't judging you. And some of the best conversations I had was out in the courtyard. You remember the courtyard next to the pool.
Yeah.
And, you know, just talking with fellow first responders. And that is therapeutic in itself, you know, to me, just talking yeah. with fellow first responders. So I'm glad you yeah. went back, brother. And I'm glad you're on the path you're on right now.
Yeah, me too.
Now, what yeah, before you, what do you think one of the main problems is with first responders? You know, the criminal justice personnel like yourself, I mean, are they worried about judgment or fear of being judged by their peers?
Oh, yeah.
That stops them from getting help?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, you say that. Like, I remember we would do whatever we do in there. You know, somebody ended up getting hurt and we saw something terrible. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't talk about it at all after that, really.
Yeah.
Unless we're joking, like, and I still to this day, I could probably call up one of my buddies from the jail and I'd be feeling weird about talking about my emotions and my feelings, yeah. you know, I, you know, cause I would think, oh, this guy's going to think this of me. Yeah. But meanwhile, I know that he's feeling it too. You know, how could yeah. you not?
Yeah.
And you know, it's, I guess it's a survival thing now.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then, you know, there was never anyone to tell us what we were feeling, you mm-hmm. know. We were just, you know, given yeah. you know, you yeah. gotta do this and
you gotta suck it up, you know.
Oh yeah, you better be here tomorrow.
yeah, yeah, you better be yeah. here tomorrow. Cover shift.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But yep. if you were like, have you ever got anybody like your buddies and peers that ever asked you, you know, John, what did it take for you to take that first step? Because I think that's the biggest fear, in my opinion, you know, is taking that first step and then what other people are going to think. So what was the catalyst, if you don't mind me asking? Was it suicide, you know, suicidal ideation? Was it just the merry-go-round or the Groundhog Day kind of thing? You were dealing with the same stuff every day? Or what was the final thing that said, I need help?
Now, mind you, I tried to get help, you know, many, many times.
Sure.
And I like at first it was just because, like, you know, I guess my parents were kind of getting like, you know, you gotta go. Just like this last time, going in, it was just absolute desperation. I knew I couldn't go on another day without going, so either going in a body bag or going to, you know, the shatterproof program.
So rock bottom.
It was the worst I've ever felt in my entire life. And I felt like that for about, you know, the last like week before I went in. It was the worst time of my life, the darkest time of my life. Yeah. I remember, it wasn't easy to even go back in there, you know, for another time. You know, I went in there and, you know, I thought I did a good job, and then, you know, failed, and then trying to go back in, it was definitely humbling. And Ray was just like, you know, John, what's it going to take? You know, I said, I'm desperate, you know, and you tell me what to do and I'm going to do it. Like, you tell me to breathe, you know, 27 different different ways, I'm going to do it. And I just completely surrendered to whatever they were telling me to do. Go do neuro. Absolutely. I went into neuro, and I remember I was basically catatonic, and I went in, they ask you, you know, what's your anxiety today? And I said, 10 out of 10. And they put me on this one protocol, the neurostimulation. They put the leads on your head. They put this protocol on me, and they ran the machine. And then afterwards, they're like, what's your anxiety? I'm like, it's gone. You know,
that one.
And yeah, I remember the day too. Like that was something else. And then after that, I said, sign me up for as much of this as I can get. I want to go.
I know. I had like 18 of those things. So
session. Oh no, bro, I got you beat. I had like 40. I said, sign me up. If this is what's going to cure me, because I was, I'm sure that there were people that were just like, just give up on this guy already. You know, he's hopeless. Like, but now, you know, it's completely flipped.
Yeah. Well, we're glad you're here, brother. And the one thing that you alluded to, and you have to go all in, John. I mean, you can you can have all the tools and the latest therapy and procedure at your fingertips, but if the patient is unwilling to go all in and accept the program and really, really want to get better, it's not going to matter, right?
No, not at all. You know, like, you can't get better for somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, there are those people that could go in and nail it the first time and they, without like being completely desperate. I've seen that. But like, if you were like me, like sick, like me, like depressed, anxious, you know, drinking too much, taking too much Xanax, like I was, like, if you were like me, like the, it's, you know, for you to get better, you gotta be desperate.
Yeah.
You know, because it's very powerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you, John. And I know the listeners are in FHE and the Shatterproof program are very proud of you. It takes a lot of courage, brother. I know you've heard this before, but it takes a lot of courage to come forward and tell your story and to go back to the program. But I commend you, brother. I mean, it's a sign of strength, you know, to say, all right, I might have struggled the first time, but I'm going back until I get this right. And that's what you did, brother, because so many people, like, you know, I don't have to tell you or the listeners, so many people give up.
Yeah.
You know,
I know. I've lost a lot of friends.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well.
I mean, a lot. So. I just hope, you know, I got friends that call me to this day, you know, I get calls all the time and they're like, hey, John, you know, I don't really want to go into treatment, but do you have any, you know, and then I just talk to them and try to get them to get their ass in there, you know,
Yeah. That's all you can do, brother. I mean, you can just talk to him, you can encourage him, but ultimately it's their decision, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about, you're an author.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about the work you got out there, brother.
Oh yeah. All right. So I just published my my first fiction novel.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The story I actually came up with while I was in Shatterproof.
That's awesome.
Another thing I didn't bring up was, you know, Gary and his studio. He gets you writing, he gets you active. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, but, yeah, I remember.
Oh, man. So that, you know, after, you know, being so sick at first, like the first couple of weeks, I didn't even want to talk. Once I started feeling a little better, I started writing, and I came up with this story. Everybody's like, John, you got to, you know, because I didn't really mention any of my stories, but I got a lot of crazy, crazy things. And so they're like, John, you need to write a book, man. And I was like, yeah, I don't feel like reliving all that crap, you know, again. Yeah. So, I wrote basically my life story, but metaphorically. It's about a World War II vet, you know, World War II times, he's a pilot, and his plane goes down, and, you know, he's got PTSD, and, you know, he ends up landing in the water, and he's got to swim like 2 miles to land. Yeah. And he starts giving up. He's like, I'm going to drown. You know, he's being weighed down by his boots. He's got, you know, he's trying to swim. And he says, you know, F it. And he starts sinking down to the, you know, bottom of the ocean. He looks up and then he sees a silhouette of this pink elephant going across, you know, across the surface. Yeah. And it was his pink elephant. He tried to get out of the plane, you know.
Yeah.
And he has an elephant, his daughter has an elephant, like a matching pair. He tries to, you know, and he swims up and he grabs it. He thought like that elephant was lost, and he remembers this saying from when he was in, you know, boot camp or whatever you call it, and it said, eat the elephant.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember reading this article when I was in Shatterproof about Navy SEAL mental toughness. And their number one thing was eat the elephant. Mm-hmm. How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, he swims up. He remembers that saying. And he's like, you know what? I'll swim a little bit. I'll take a break. I'll swim a little bit. I'll take a break and maybe I'll make it. If I try to swim all 2 miles at once, probably going to die.
Yeah.
So he makes it to the island. I'm not going to summarize the whole book, but he makes it to the island and basically learns how to like live again with the help of like the natives that are on the island and a little bit of magic. Yeah.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just want as many people to read it as possible, you know, because there's a lot of stuff I put in there that, you know, they're life lessons that I actually used and learned, you know?
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Where can people find it, John?
It's on Amazon.
What's it called?
Elephinity, The Saving of a Hero.
And for the listeners, that's going to be linked up in the show notes. So you can head over to Amazon and grab a copy. And I know, John, I can't wait till I get my copy. You sent me a copy. I can't wait to read it. And where can people find you, John? If they want to reach out to you and hear more about you and your story, where can they find you, brother?
They can email me at simp427@gmail.com. And I'm pretty good with checking my email. You reach out to me with a question or what you're going through. You know, I got I never even said I'm out of Shatterproof for 2 years now.
Yeah.
You know,
well, congratulations. So
I haven't had a sip of a drink. I haven't taken a pill in 2 years. But not only that, I've been pretty much mentally sound. I've been the happiest I've been since I'm a kid, you know, since leaving there. That's awesome. So, yeah, I mean,
program works, man. That's why it's the number one program in the country, brother.
Yeah.
That's why it's Shatterproof.
Yeah. If anybody needs to reach out to me, don't be afraid to, you know, just send me an email.
So final thing I have, brother. So if anybody is suffering out there, and there's a lot of first responders, a lot of people in corrections, a lot of people in the criminal justice field that suffer in silence, what advice would you give them, brother, that are going through some stuff right now?
So one, don't isolate. Do your best to get out. I know what it's like to just want to lay down in the bed when life's kicking your butt and when you're depressed, you know, that bed, that couch, the loneliness, the darkness, that feels like your best friend, but really it's your worst enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I encourage anybody to just, you know, call a friend, you know,
yeah,
call somebody. Call,
yeah.
Yeah.
Reach out to John. Reach out to me.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, that's a dangerous thing, is that isolation. But also just, you know, try to find something to be creative with. That's what I did. Like, I picked up the guitar and, you know, it's something to motivate you, you know?
Yeah.
I picked up the guitar. I started writing poems. I created, you know, all these poems like Gary that he, you know, threw on the, we recorded them in the studio.
Oh yeah.
But just, you know, and you don't have to be in, you know, that place with, you know, a whole studio, but just sit down and you could write. Writing, I find, helps me the most because I have so much stuff coming out of me without me even knowing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, writing is very therapeutic. And it's like you said, I'm glad you mentioned writing. And you mentioned Gary, who did the music therapy at FHG in the Shatterproof program. That stuff's amazing, man.
Yeah.
It really is powerful.
The breath work. I don't know if you did the breath work over there.
Oh, Lisa. Oh, yeah.
So here's another thing. I start doing that at home by myself, right? I would just put the headphones in, just my music, cover my eyes, and that's my time, you know, just to relax. You know, you don't have anything else in the world to worry about, just take in the music. And when you start to deeply relax, you know, some emotions come out and
yeah, it's powerful.
It's very healing. And then even I got this thing I do where I still do it. Like, I started it at FHE, I Shower in the Dark by Candlelight, right?
Yeah, hey.
So
whatever works.
So I turn off all the lights, I light a candle, and I like to listen to like Jewel and like female singers with like a nice voice that's kind of calming and you know, so I put on that music in the shower and it calms me down so much.
You. Yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome, brother. Well, John, I want to thank you, brother, for coming on the show. And like I said, everything we talked about is going to be linked up in the show notes. And like I said, brother, I mean, I'm proud of you, man. I mean, for coming forward and, you know, being on the show, telling your story again, but, you know, going through the Shatterproof program, because like you, it was a lifesaver to me. And, if you need anything, brother, you know where to reach me. Next time in Florida, I want to come down and visit you, brother.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
All right, man.
All right, Patrick.
You take care, brother.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care. Be safe.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.